All right, question number six. What concrete actions will your party take to end chronic homelessness and increase supply of affordable housing within Canada? And up first is Phaedra.
Thank you, Ron. In Salmon Arm and even smaller towns like Sorrento and Sicamous, we're seeing more people without a safe place to sleep. This didn't happen overnight. It's a result of decades of underinvestment and policies that favor big developers. The NDP has a plan to build hundreds of thousands of affordable, rent-geared-to-income, and co-op homes. We'll give nonprofits the tools to buy and preserve existing rental stock, and we'll launch a federal strategy to prevent homelessness with stable operating funds for shelters and transitional housing. This isn't about handouts. It's about ensuring no one is left behind and everyone has the dignity of a home. Thank you.
Thank you, Phaedra. Mel, you're up.
Thank you. Once again, the priority rises to the top of housing and the constant homelessness that we're seeing. One of the things our party will do is we will invest in 5,000 recovery and retreatment beds across the country so that we can get those loved ones who are someone's family member off of the drugs, recovered, and safely back home again. Not everyone, but a portion of our homeless are there because of mental health or addiction issues. That's just one piece of dealing with the homeless issue. The other piece is we will build more homes. We will create trades positions through the apprenticeship program by sponsoring up to $4,000 for apprentices to learn the trades, a program that was recently cut by the current Liberal government. We have to build more homes. We have to incentivize builders to build homes. If you take away any incentive to be a landlord, as we've seen over the past 9 years, landlords aren't going to build rental homes to rent out. There are a number of pieces to this issue. It takes the communities, the provincial, the federal governments, and Indigenous governments all working together to build more homes to increase the supply so there's a home for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. Owen?
The Green Party wants one-third of Canadians who earn $40,000 or less to have no income tax, and that releases more funds to be able to afford a person's rent. The second plank is to provide rent support for low-income Canadians, and the third one is to build affordable homes but to make sure that they stay affordable. So how do you do that? You put a covenant on the land title, which pegs the cost of that to about 30% of your average income in Canada. What happens is affordable homes don't stay affordable because they fall into the hands of speculators. And if we can keep speculators out of the housing industry, we will have more affordable homes. Our arable land we bought in 2015 for $10,000 went to $40,000 by 2022 when we had to move. So that's not you and me that's causing that. That's speculators buying up farmland in the valley. And without moving on those speculators, we're never going to have truly affordable homes.
Thank you, Owen. Ken.
Yes, Mark Carney-led government will double the pace of construction to almost 500,000 new homes a year with a housing plan that will get the federal government back in the business of home building. By building affordable housing at scale, including on public lands, provide over $25 billion in financing to innovation prefabric home builders in Canada, including those using Canadian technology resources like mass timber and soft wood lumber to build faster, smarter, more affordable, and more sustainable, and provide $10 billion in low-cost financing and capital to affordable home builders. We need to understand that as a community, we also have to work with those municipalities as well because they're going to be hooking up to, obviously, the utilities. We need to make sure that they have those reduction in red tape, for instance, so that we know that they will be ready for hookup. Because at the same time, you can build homes, but you need to have a plan. The Liberal Party does. Thank you.
And Michael.
The People's Party of Canada believes the best way to end chronic homelessness is to address the root cause and unleash the housing market, not expand government dependency. We would remove restrictive zoning and federal red tape that blocks housing development. eliminate the GST on new home construction to lower costs, stop funding programs that trap people in dependence, and instead support treatment-based models for addiction and mental health. We would respect property rights and empower local solutions, not one-size-fits-all federal programs. Affordable housing comes from more supply, lower taxes, fewer barriers, not bigger bureaucracy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Question number 7. How do you plan to involve community organizations, Indigenous nations, and advocacy groups in federal policy development and decision-making? And we start with Ken.
Yes, thank you for that question. In the environment, we will work to get clean energy parks built quickly across Canada. We'll fast-track projects of national interest, which will be jointly identified with provinces and territories and Indigenous nations. We will sign cooperation and substitution agreements with all willing provinces and territories and Indigenous governing bodies within 6 months, ensuring the projects only go through one review that upholds environmental standards and the Indigenous duty to consult and consent. In the Arctic, we will bolster Indigenous stewardship, including by establishing a new Arctic Indigenous Guardians program and funding Indigenous-led conservation and protection projects. We will develop a trade and energy corridor along the provinces and territories and Indigenous partners for transport, energy, critical minerals, and digital connectivity, including through the Trade Diversification Corridor Fund. We'll double the Indigenous Loan Guarantee Program from $5 to $10 billion and expanding it to support more Indigenous-led infrastructure, transportation, and trade projects across the country. This will make it easier for more Indigenous communities to become owners of major resource projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Michael.
The People's Party of Canada supports inclusive, transparent engagement without favoritism or tokenism. We would involve community organizations, Indigenous nations, and advocacy groups based on merit, accountability, and respect for equal citizenship. We believe in direct consultation with communities, not just with Ottawa-appointed elites. We support local self-determination for Indigenous nations, including control over services and development. We focus on outcomes, not identity politics, to ensure policies serve all Canadians fairly. We want voices heard, but we reject the divisive top-down frameworks. Unity, fairness, and grassroots input will guide our decisions.
Thank you, Michael. Phaedra.
Thank you, Ron. True reconciliation means more than land acknowledgments. It means co-developing policies with Indigenous nations and funding local organizations that are already doing the work on the ground. In this riding, we are on the territories of the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. The NDP will honor the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, implement the TRC calls to action, and fund Indigenous-led housing, healthcare, and education. We'll also ensure grassroots groups, whether in Salmon Arm, Chase, Enderby, or other rural areas, have a seat at the table when federal policies are designed. Because when policy is built from the ground up, it works better for everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Phaedra. Mel.
Thank you. The question was, how will you, or meaning how will I, involve community organizations? This is something I've been doing for the last 9.5 years as an elected member of parliament, meeting with the municipal governments, meeting with community organizations, meeting with individuals on their doorsteps, listening to the issues in the communities that I've represented. I hope to be able to continue that. I reach out annually pre-budget to pre-federal budget release so that I can identify the priority issues in each community with organizations so that I can carry that message forward to Ottawa to advocate for that. That's part of the role of a member of parliament, is to be connected with your community, with your community organizations, and with individuals on the doorstep. We've been doing that. I've been doing that for 9.5 years, and especially over the last 3 weeks, knocking on doors from one end of this riding to the other to learn
what it is that the communities need from the federal government. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. And Owen.
The Impact Assessment Act 2019 is a federal piece of legislation that protects Indigenous consultation when it comes to oil, gas, pipelines being pushed through traditional territories. It follows through with Supreme Court decisions like Chilcotin, and it follows through on the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Both the Liberal Party and the Conservative Party, in the face of the challenge of the Trump administration and quote-unquote nation-building, have talked about reneging on that act and pushing impact assessments back to provinces, thus denying Indigenous consultation rights. The Green Party will not allow that to happen. We can't reverse history, and it's against reconciliation in this country.
Okay, thank you, Owen. Question number 8, the carbon tax has proven to be a very contentious issue. Going forward, what are your party's long-term plans for both the consumer and industrial carbon pricing, and why? And we start with Owen.
Climate change is expensive. My own house insurance is up 25% because of the cost of insurance providers having to rebuild people's homes. The fire in 2003 in Kelowna, for one, cost $250 million for insurance providers. The carbon tax became demonized and scapegoated as the reason why life was so expensive in Canada. That was driven by the Conservative Party, and I have to accept that it has become deeply unpopular. However, we believe that polluters should pay, not taxpayers. And so segments of our economy will be given a budget, and if they exceed that carbon budget, then they will pay. And using that money, plus not subsidizing the fossil fuel industry, we believe that we can actually prepare Canada for the climate shocks ahead. One last note, the Roots and Blues Festival was shut down in 2023 because of a wildfire. How much did that cost this local economy? Thanks.
Thank you, Owen. Ken?
Yes. Mark Carney government will use the reform carbon tax market to finance these climate conscious choices, meaning that big polluters, not taxpayers, will pay. On his first day as Prime Minister, Mark Carney canceled the carbon tax, saving Canadians an average of 18 cents a litre on the price of gas. This is where we have to understand that things become more affordable as the gas tax is eliminated. But we heard from you, the voters, that we needed to understand that the big polluters still have to pay, and we're still going to make sure that they do. But I want to kind of touch on one thing. I actually reached out to the Kupis here, the chiefs around here, in regards to many issues that are affecting them. Why? Because I am Indigenous. I do care. There are a number of reasons why, but what I haven't heard is some of the candidates up here who haven't for a long time. They have not really made a difference when it came to housing, infrastructure. This is where I understand is why, because I've lived this. I know what's going on in reserves in regards to economic development. We're trying to turn the page in history. And that is why I'm running. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Mel, you're up.
I'll be very clear on this one. Mark Carney didn't eliminate the carbon tax. He only zero-rated it for an election period. The way it is right now, it's still there in legislation, and it could be raised back up to what it was before or even higher, which was what the Liberal government planned to do, and I don't doubt that they still plan to do that. They're going to introduce it at an industrial level. So that's the first component of that. Every time a product then moves down the supply chain, that carbon tax price or cost that's built into the cost will compound every step of the way. So you are going to pay more for a carbon tax under the current Liberal government, should they be reelected again. We can't afford another 4 years. I think everyone here has seen their, almost everyone here would have seen their natural gas bills, a gas bill showing that you'd used $14 worth of gas, but the carbon tax, by the time it's added on to every other step of the way, the carbon tax is $47 when you only used $14 worth of gas. The Conservative government will completely end the carbon tax through legislation. We will make sure that the big polluters don't pollute. not just that they can pay, but we'll make sure they don't pollute through technology. We have that ability here in Canada. The Conservative government, or the Conservative opposition party, was the one that pushed for removal of the carbon tax. Mark Carney, on his first day, zero-rated it. He did not remove it, and he probably will not. That's where we stand on the carbon tax. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
If I've got a few seconds left.
Actually, you don't.
But, okay.
But you can meet me outside later. Just fill me in. Michael, you're next.
The People's Party of Canada will abolish the carbon tax completely and permanently for both consumers and industry. We reject the idea that punishing Canadians at the pump or taxing businesses into submission will fix the environment. Our plan is simple. End all federal carbon pricing schemes. Cancel the Liberals' net zero targets that devastate industry and agriculture. Support practical environmental stewardship, not ideological climate policy. Canadians need affordable energy, thriving industries, and food security, not higher costs and job losses. The PPC stands for prosperity, not punishment.
Thank you, Michael. Phaedra?
Thanks, Ron. People in our region are already dealing with the climate crisis, whether it's wildfires, droughts, or floods. And while people are doing their part, they see oil and gas giants getting billions of dollars in subsidies and paying next to nothing in carbon taxes. The NDP would shift the burden off of families and small businesses and onto the big polluters. We'd end the consumer carbon tax, eliminate oil and gas subsidies, and invest in retrofits, clean energy, and home heating rebates that actually help people save on their bills while polluting less. Let's stop punishing the people doing their best and start holding the biggest polluters accountable. Thank you.
Thank you, Phaedra. All right, question number 9. International student numbers have been impacted by federal immigration policy. Locally, we have seen a reduction in program availability and labor shortages. As a regional representative, what would you advocate for in relation to immigration policies for international students? And we start with Mel.
Thank you. I'm somewhat well-versed on this, but not as well as a university administrator might be. But the Liberal immigration policies didn't deal with the bad actors. The fake universities and education facilities that were luring international students to Canada only to get here to find out that their program wasn't accredited or in some cases not even available. That has to stop, for one thing. My MP office has been receiving a massive number of inquiries from individuals that came over to Canada or into Canada as foreign students. They're now not able to get work visas. They're not able to continue studying here. They're panicking, trying to get visas extended. My office has been inundated with this type of call since the Liberals changed the foreign student policy here in Canada. Basically, it was a knee-jerk reaction trying to address a problem that they had created in the first place. We need a fair, compassionate, considerate immigration and foreign student policy here in Canada. A Conservative government will deliver that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. Phaedra.
Thank you, Ron. International students contribute to our local economy, our colleges, and our communities. But Ottawa failed to regulate recruitment, and now students and the programs that serve them are paying the price. My husband has a second job. He works at the local Okanagan College and Salmon Arm campus, and has done so for 20 years. With the declining enrollment and cuts to the various programs, we are really beginning to worry if he will even have a job with a college next year. The college has just built much-needed and long-awaited student housing for students going to the college. Now, with the cuts, that too is in doubt, if it even will even be used for the purposes it was built for. The NDP will stabilize the system, ensure colleges get the funding they need to support students, and crack down on exploitive recruitment practices. We'll also streamline pathways to permanent residency and fix credential recognition so newcomers can actually work in the fields they're trained in. In communities like Salmon Arm, we need these students, and they deserve a system that works for them, not against them. Thank you.
Thanks, Adrian. And Michael.
The People's Party of Canada supports a smaller, smarter immigration system that puts the interests of Canadians first, including the education and the labor market. We would reassess the volume of international students to match local housing and job market realities, prioritize students in programs with real labor market demand, especially in regions facing shortages. We'd streamline work permits for high-performing students who contribute to Canada's economy. We'd crack down on fraudulent institutions and protect the integrity of our education system. International students should be a benefit, not a burden. We'll ensure policies serve both local communities and national priorities.
Thank you, Michael. Owen?
Yeah, I arrived into this country as a temporary foreign worker, not a student, but a temporary foreign worker. And I was lucky enough to have an employer who did a labor review and said that they needed me and there wasn't a Canadian option. I got to be a permanent resident and then ended up swearing an oath to the Queen, which is quite the thing to do when you become a citizen and you're Irish and your ancestors probably died to prevent that from needing to happen. But I did it because this is the best country in the world for me to be in. And so I love that story, and I just want an international student or worker to have the same clear pathways that I did. I don't want them to be profiled in any way. However, we should do regional planning to make sure that our student immigration is tied to the local labor needs. I'm out of time.
Thank you, Ken. All right. Sorry, thank you. Owen, Ken.
Yes, so we'll allow qualified foreign workers who register for apprenticeships to study without a permit, so more than can contribute to our communities now as they develop their skills they need for their future. We want workers coming here and contributing to Canada to have a clear pathway to stay and the opportunity to access program supports, training, and organizations that do support them. As an example, as healthcare workers as well, and construction expertise. So thank you.
All right. And our 10th question and final question. The riding has a growing number of temporary foreign workers on closed work permits who play key roles in local communities but lack the freedom to easily change employers in cases of abuse in their workplace. What changes would you make to the closed work permit system or the temporary foreign worker program in general to increase safety for temporary foreign workers and facilitate access to justice in cases of employer abuse? And we start with Michael.
The People's Party of Canada believes in treating all workers with dignity and fairness while putting Canadians first in hiring. We would reform temporary foreign worker program to replace closed work permits with sector or region-specific permits, giving workers the freedom to leave abusive employers without leaving the country. We'd strictly penalize exploitive employers and increase transparency and reporting mechanisms for abuse. We'd ensure better screening and oversight of job offers before workers arrive. We'd limit the program to genuine labor shortages and invest in training Canadians to fill those roles over the long term. No one should be trapped in an abusive situation. The PPC supports a fair, accountable system that protects workers and restores integrity to our labor market.
Thank you, Michael. Owen.
Yeah, as a local farmer, we have severe challenges with finding seasonal labor and have to invest in the temporary foreign worker program, and we're setting up accommodations for that. It's no doubt that temporary foreign workers have had abusive scenarios concerning their situation, their housing situations. But we've gone through a very intensive examination of the housing we're going to provide, which is to say that thankfully we have adjusted and reacted to the abuses that have gone on in the past. I don't believe that if we were ever tough or abusive to our workers that they should be denied the right to just up sticks and try and find somebody else. They should have that right. It's that's the difference between a closed permit and an open but sector-specific permit. So I support open permits and not closed ones.
Keep thinking along. Ken.
Yes, thanks for the question. I do support the opening TIF. There are many reasons that we have to actually cap on our immigration policies, as we are learning that we've done many things as Canadians. For instance, we've answered the call for Ukrainians to come here. We've also asked to open in regards to Syrians as well when they're facing a crisis as well. But with that influx, of course, there were many things that were in regards to how are we going to really improve the access to justice for this. Given that it's the last question of the night, I'd like to address the elephant in the room, and that is Donald Trump and his trade war and the real threat to our country. As recently as this past Friday, Trump was saying he wants Canada to be the 51st state. This is unlike any election before. It comes at a time of crisis. President Trump's tariffs are disrupting global markets, fundamentally reshaping an international trade system. His stance on Canada is even more direct and aggressive. He wants to weaken us so America can own us. Our response is to fight, protect, and build. A Mark Carney-led government will stand strong against President Trump's tariffs, create new jobs, cut taxes for the middle class, modernize our energy infrastructure, and build the cleanest, fastest, and growing economy in the G7. Liberals will build a strong Canada. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ken. Phaedra.
Thanks, Ron. I've spoken with workers and employers in agricultural and hospitality who rely on migrant labor, but our current system is broken. Closed work permits trap workers in abusive situations with no recourse and no real protection. The NDP will end the closed work permit system and replace it with open work permits so workers have the freedom to leave unsafe jobs. We'll ensure access to health care, housing, and legal support and create clear paths to permanent residency. No one who contributes to our community should be treated as disposable. It's time to make our immigration system fair and just for workers, for families, and for Canada. Thank you.
Thank you, Phaedra. And Mel.
Thank you, Ron. The temporary foreign worker issue is very complex, dealt with a number of cases, and in no case should any employee be subject to abusive or exploitive employment situation. There are measures in place to address that. If the government has been lax in enforcing that, then shame on the government and shame on the employer for imposing those abusive situations. There is currently a labor market impact assessment required for anyone bringing in temporary foreign workers. The employers have to go through that process. It costs them about $1,000 plus a $250 non-refundable deposit. Then they also have to provide, by law, appropriate accommodation, and they often have to provide the transportation for the employee into Canada and back out again. If that employee is brought in at the cost of that one first employer, and that employer has done nothing wrong, should the cost of that be passed on if the employee decides simply by choice to go somewhere else, not because of abuse? That's how complex this issue is, and it needs to be worked through. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. Well, those are the first 10 questions. I know what you're all thinking, because I'm thinking it myself. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a couple more questions? Yeah? I can see the enthusiasm just waving over me.